you've tapped or clicked in to College Volleyball Weekly on Viral Volley Media. Now here's your host, Rob on mic.
Hey, good day, everyone. We are in College Volleyball Weekly, Men's Top 20, and we've let go of two of our guys. No, just kidding. They're all on vacation because their seasons. Oh, wait. Look who's coming in the room right now. I love these impromptu coming in hot moments here, especially when all the coaches on our College Volleyball Weekly podcast are off technically because they aren't in the NCAA tournament. So as you see, Dan Friend from Lewis is coming on, but before him was Brad Rostratter of UC San Diego, Jay Hossick of George Mason, Theo Edwards of CSUN having a brawl with the administration, it sounds like, last minute out, but he was planning on being in. And we'll say, Dan, now that we see his wonderful, cleaned up look here, now that he's relaxing, I think he's probably playing beach volleyball weekend on the lake is what I'm thinking.
No, but I did play once. You're right. So,
well, this is episode 18, as Jason pointed out before coming live. And as we all know, week 18 is the NCAA Men's Division 1-2 Championship. And of course, we're going to talk about it. But while we were semi-planning the show, the AVCA All-America team came out. So I wanted to get your guys' responses right off the bat, being that's fresh news, if you've even seen the entire list. But I definitely have thoughts, but I'd love to get your guys' thoughts. Let's start with you, Jay.
All right. First of all, a lot of heavy hitters in that group. The All-American first and second team is full of really, really good players. I have to correct myself. I could have sworn I was in on the call this year. Apparently I was not. Shocker, but regardless, it doesn't matter. And you look at some of the guys in the honorable mention, and there's some big time players in there. I mean, Justin Bianchi arguably could have been one of the best opposites in the country all year long and was an honorable mention. And I think you can argue, and some people on Volley Talk have mentioned, you know, the team record has something to do with it and rankings and this. I'll be honest with you. I'm not so sure that it does, but you know, if you're on the honorable mention, you definitely need to be congratulated. That's a strong list of people, and it's a fairly large one. Secondly, I'm surprised that there's two liberos on the second All-American team. Not that I think Cole Power is not deserving, or the other libero that's on there, but man, oh man, you know, that takes a spot away from maybe somebody who scored a few more points maybe for the teams that are up there. But regardless, I think it's a good list. I think they got the, newcomer of the year fairly right. I don't know who else would be in that hunt. But Daniel Fabakovic, is a worthy freshman, and got a lot of playing time this year. So kudos to him. And we'll find out about coach of the year and player of the year. But if it's who I'm thinking, I don't have any insider information. I think those are both good choices that are coming out. So
I want to be sure to name drop, because the two libros you're referring to, the second team, are Cole Power and Ryan Merck of Penn State. So,
and
I mean, it's hard to say.
Dare we say three liberos on the second team with Brett Sheward as well, even though he's played center this year.
Good call, Rob.
Let's go over to Dan.
Yeah, well, it's always an interesting thing, like record versus rank stats versus like the other things committees might look at. I mean, certainly as a guy who was on the committee for a long time, and I respect, first of all, thanks to all the work that everybody's on the committee that's doing that. A lot of those guys put a lot of time and effort into it. That aside, my personal opinion is like, there's a couple guys probably on honor mention, like Jay said, that easily could be second team. It's hard to recognize all the guys sometimes. And I look at Sheehan. I think Sheehan led the country in assists per game. So if you just purely went off a stat basis, you'd be like, well, why is he not there? Do you know what I mean? And so, so I think sometimes those opinions can vary a little bit. Like there are some things from a statistical standpoint, where it's like, hey, is somebody leading the blocks in the country? Is somebody leading in kills per game? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you look at Rajay from Quincy. It's like, well, of course, that guy's numbers are ridiculous. You know what I mean? So he should be on honorable mention. And we talk about Bianchi, you know, that's, you know, a team that certainly couldn't have survived if he wasn't putting up some of those numbers in some of those matches, you know what I mean, in terms of that. So Clark Godbole, we know he went off on the in the Big West tournament, but he was just so-so in the year number-wise. So I don't know. It's a great list. There's probably guys that aren't on that honorable mention that are pretty darn good that got left off. I think it's tough. I think you saw us expand to this honorable mention list a few years back because we wanted to recognize more guys, and the list has slowly grown because you get more and more teams. And so you'd like, hey, what's the right number, or when do you go to a third team? And we expanded the first and second team to 12 members because it was 10 members. So I thought that was a good thing. But I don't know. A lot of great players to recognize. It's probably Penn dominant, but we also know we're Penn dominant across the country right now. You know, if you're comparing like the middle pool and the setting pool. And then the last piece, you know, we brought up freshman of the year. It would have been Tread from Hawaii is probably the other guy that was probably in that mix.
Tread Rosenthal had to be in that discussion.
Yeah, but Fab's numbers, he's hitting 380. I mean, ridiculous on what he was hitting as an outside and passing the full time, and he was passing pretty well. So, I don't know. So pretty good numbers for the Czech kid. So,
all right, Brad.
Yeah, I mean, the first team is pretty clear, right? I think that one's pretty well established and pretty evident. And then the second team, I think that's where it gets really gray and can get really fuzzy, especially when you have guys who maybe haven't had this year they're accustomed to, you know, and you look like a Will Rotman, obviously an All-American and has had some fantastic career, where this year, I don't know if he played as well as he had in past years throughout, you know, albeit he had some injuries he was dealing with and different pieces where it's like, I mean, he's an All-American in my eyes, you know, so I see him being on the second team there. But yeah, there are some pieces where that can get a little fuzzy, or some guys who maybe missed some time and you're not too sure. But I think it's a great list, and the honorable mentions, there's probably a few that are left off. And just like there's a few honorable mentions that we think could be second teams. And then I think for newcomer of the year, statistically, they got it right. And it is hard to view the statistics of a setter versus an outside hitter. It's always going to weigh that way. And I think the one advantage that everyone voting on this committee has that we don't necessarily have right now is they look at not just how they played throughout the year, but how they played against the top opponents and against ranked opponents. And I think that really helps when you get into the nitty gritty and you find those guys where it's like, ooh, there may be honorable mention, maybe second team. I think that really can be the deciding factor there in terms of swaying the votes one way or the other.
Yeah. I keep thinking like of Tread Rosenthal, not because I'm Big West biased by any means, but if there was a 17-year-old of the year, he definitely would have got it because that kid can play. And he had to carry a big burden, especially after Hawaii lost Spiros Hakus. So I feel like that first and second team could just all be first team. So I'm looking at the names on there, and I'm like, gosh, that's not unfortunate, but it just shows how much talent has been out there this season. And then looking at the honorable mention, a name that I didn't see on there, Jack Duker of USC, who really turned it on in the second half of the season because Dylan Klein couldn't do it all, and Duker stepped in. So I think Brad and both Dan mentioned that there are probably some names that aren't on there that probably could be. But, I mean, that's such a great sign for volleyball, in my opinion. It's just the bummer the guys are left off.
Well, at what point do we have a 13 like the women's do? You know, is there a number of programs? And granted, I think if you look at, what is it, 24 and 30, there's something like 60 almost players from around the country. And how many D1, D2 programs are there right now? At some point, it becomes watered down when you have too many for so few teams. But if we keep growing, some point soon, we're going to have to go back. And if D2 splits off and gets their own championship, is there going to be a D1 All-American list and a D2 All-American list that'll be separate? In which case, you know, maybe D1 goes back down to one team and then an honorable mention, or maybe a first and a second and no honorable mention. You know, D2 might have more. You know, you might have honorable mention. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Jay's right. I think it's tough to do a third team yet. We just don't have enough teams. I think we're doing the best we can. We've kind of pushed the honorable mention, but at some point you have to make a cutoff. Do you know what I mean? And so I think until we get to a bigger mark, it's tough to kind of expand beyond kind of where we're at. I think we've kind of pushed the limits, which is great. So
and last thing, I think a few guys like Mason Briggs, what, four-time All-American as a libero. That's, I don't know if I haven't heard of anyone doing that. I'm sure someone has somewhere along the way.
Then there's a five-time guy. I'm just letting you know.
So, as a libero?
No. There's a five-time guy.
I think Michael Brinkley was, but it's the MPSF back in the day.
Got it.
Because there was the way the language is on the Big West release is the first 4-year Big West athlete. So
who was the five-time guy, Dan?
Coonan. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ryan Coonan because of the COVID year.
I had a feeling of the Lewis guy.
He's only the only five-time All-American. Come on, buddy.
That's pretty sweet.
And then Gianni's the multiple first freshman of the year or newcomer
exactly.
Of the year. Thank COVID for that one, right?
Yeah.
But then, so, and then we have some three-time All-Americans. You got Ethan Champlin, Merrick McHenry, Will Rotman, and then Guillerme Voss. So I think all those guys, three times being them All-American and is pretty darn impressive. And all those guys are ending their careers. Huge shout out to those guys. They did great things for men's volleyball and for the youth volleyball players watching them play the last few years.
Yep. Well, anything else on the ABCA All-America list just out? Are we good there?
You can ask these guys coach of the year or player of the year.
Sure.
What are our predictions?
Well, let's see. Who feels like they want to jump in on that one?
I'll go player of the year.
Easiest one, right?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. It's got to be Heno.
Heno.
Yeah, I can't imagine at this point it's going to be anybody else. The guy is stupid good. Man amongst boys.
Well, let me ask you this. Throw this out there. What happens if Spiros Hakas was healthy the whole season?
We'd have to see what the result would be.
Yeah.
What ifs, buddy?
And I'd even say with where they were at when Hakas went down, I still would probably edge Heno. But it'd be a lot more of a debatable conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go. We're going to leave the coach of the year, but assistant coach of the year, because that's something that's being awarded at the banquet. Any thoughts on assistant coach of the year or associate, like we like to see now these days?
That's tough because I think these guys are privy of who got nominated. I just think there's some other guys I wish that would have got nominated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys saw, I think but that's usually comes from the head coach, dude. You know what I mean? It's not just like on the coach of the year, it's like everybody that's in the tournament is automatically plugged in. And then all the coach of the years that won from their conferences are automatically plugged in. On the assistant coach, it has to be nominated from somebody, either a head coach or an athletic department or things like that. And in terms of that, I'm just giving some info. So,
yeah.
So not even a stab.
I think Matt August at Grand Canyon is probably a leading candidate in that category. He's done some pretty nice things for Worley and has been a loyal soldier and knows how to coach. And, you know, I mean, they had a hell of a year. I'd say that's probably the guy who I would say is leading the charge. It's easy, I think, to look at, you know, the guys from UCLA. And I think it's easy to look at the guys from Long Beach. They all are good. It's not like they're not deserving of it. But if you're looking at a standout year, one where somebody maybe did some things that may have not been the case in years past, and it's an exceptional year, I'd say he's probably the leading candidate.
Yeah, I'd be looking at the Knicks. You have Nick Vogel at UCLA, Nick McRae at Long Beach. I think between those two and Matt August, it's a pretty stellar crew of coaches right there.
Yeah.
I think the other one that might be like Pat Schworn or Colin McMillan at Penn State. I mean, I think a couple guys that Steadfast, been there for a while. And, you know, I mean, here's the thing is like George Mason plays Penn State great, but we just expect Penn State to be there. Some people do. And it's like, it's a lot of work to sustain that and continue to do what they're doing. And so kudos to not just Pat, but his group of coaches, you know what I mean, in terms of that. So,
yep. All right, let's do it. Your fellow colleagues, coach of the year candidates, who you got?
Worley,
Worley.
Allen, Allen and Worley are both pretty good ones. So,
who is the other one, Dan?
Allen Knight.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I'm going to go dark horse only because, and that's Joe at Lindenwood. I think he is
taking, good one.
He has taken his program to new heights, achieved things that have not been done at his program before. And I know they didn't win the conference, but you want to talk about putting yourself on the map for future generations and, you know, recruiting and alumni to be proud of and all that stuff. Joe's done a fantastic job, there. So I think it's probably going to go to Worley, but if I were to, this is the one that I think, you know, Dan was talking about. Did Joe win for the MEVA this year?
He did not win for the MEVA.
So that's one of those ones where, you know, Dan's talking about, you know, the coaches of the year for each conference automatically get thrown in. But somebody asked me the other day, you know, how does that list get created? And my thought process is sometimes we, and I mean we as the proverbial we of college coaches, we know who the top dogs are. Like, we know all the time who's winning and who's on. Those are sometimes easy choices and kind of just, I'm just going to phone it in because it is what it is. But when you recognize, I think, a coach that maybe doesn't get all that fanfare, right? And a coach that has really put in some time to build his program, to run it the right way, to have some great results in a year, to do some new things. I think there's something to be said that as coaches, I recognize that. And as much as I think Worley is deserving of the main choice, I think Joe should be commended amongst the coaches. He did a fantastic job there.
Yeah. Brad, anything to add?
No, I think it'll end up getting split some way or the other, right? If Matt Worley ends up winning coach of the year, then I don't think Matt August ends up getting assistant coach of the year. Then it'd probably go to Nick Vogel or Nick McRae or someone in that way. Or if Allen Knight ends up winning coach of the year, which I think those would be my two top candidates, then it would probably get split to either, you know, Nick Vogel or Matt August at Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Well, we know they did get the conference awards. Worley got MPSF Coach of the Year in the Big West. Allen Knipe of Long Beach State received Coach of the Year. Conference Carolina's Derek Sullivan. And then EIVA was Pav. MEVO is Donan Cruz. Who am I forgetting here? I'm missing the conference in there, aren't I?
NEC.
NEC, I did not see their site yet, but or their release. I'm going to assume that's Rummy that got it.
That'd be my assumption, or Donnie.
Yeah. Him or Donnie.
I can pull that up while we're discussing. But those are the likely candidates that for the ABCA Coach of the Year, and we shall see. The banquet will be, it'll be announced at the banquet on Wednesday night. I will be privy to that list. So but I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag before.
You're not going to leak it or anything?
I'm not going to leak it. Well, just say that you guys are on the right track. How about that? So with that, of course, what everyone's been wanting to talk about and chatter is the breakdown of this year's NCAA tournament. I'm thinking looking 1-8 first and 2-7 and so forth from there. So let's do that with our very knowledgeable and very vocal podcast crew here. We're going to start with Fort Valley State and UCLA, the 1 versus 8. That is going to be the early match of the day to start off the tournament tomorrow or Tuesday, depending on when you're watching or listening to this. So first thoughts on UCLA versus Fort Valley State of the SIAC.
I think you'd be in a large boat with a lot of people to say that UCLA is going to win this match. However, my question is, does UCLA, because you're going to have potentially 3 matches in what, 5 days, 6 days? Does UCLA and Long Beach have a little bit of advantage and maybe play some backup first team All-Americans? Let that sink in for a second. Some backup All-American players that will give some rest to some of the guys that they'll need down the way. And if that's the case, that definitely helps out their cause down the line. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Fort Valley do something pretty cool here and there. Maybe they keep a couple of the games tight and it becomes exciting and it's fun to watch. I don't think Larry is walking into this going, hey, we're you know, heavily favored to win this. I think he's going to go in it and have his team well prepared. You know, Che Cooper and Isaiah Fed are going to lead that charge, and I think they're going to be some really good plays. And I think the average fan is going to be really pleasantly surprised by the product that's put out by Fort Valley State. It's not a bad level of volleyball. And, you know, I know some people are saying, oh, there's so many other teams that are deserving to be in the big dance. Hey, when we go to 16, that'll happen. But now you have these two teams going at it. And Fort Valley, I think, is going to show that, you know, favored or not, they're going to go in and they're going to give it their all. And people are going to be happy with the product they put out. And I wish them all the best of luck.
I need to add that I did forget one of the conference coaches of the year. It's SCIAC. It was Larry Rather. So I definitely want to get it out there because I know he's worked hard and he's building a great program out there at Fort Valley State. So please do continue on the conversation. Let's jump over to, we'll go Brad this time.
So for me, I mean, when they played, and I think it was both teams' first match of the year, maybe Fort Valley State had played Pepperdine prior. But UCLA won 25-18, 25-12, 25-17. And I think we'll see one set where UCLA gets hot from the end line and catches them off guard and wins pretty dramatically. But then I think we also see another set where UCLA has some service errors. When they played earlier on in the year, UCLA served really, really well and really effectively. And they have some stretches where they can have some errors build up. So I could see a set that's, you know, 25-22 or 25-23 and even getting really close in there. Kicking off the tournament, but I'd say in general it'll end up being UCLA in control of the match, and I would think they play their lineup and try to get their lineup playing as good as possible over the next three matches they hope to play.
Yeah. All right, close out with Dan.
Yeah, I thought Jay brought up a really valid point. Like, does UCLA's got so much depth. You get into this tournament, it's like maybe they don't have to play the main guy all the time. And so and the main guy changes for them anyway sometimes. But it's like I think they'll start with their horses but be able to change pieces a little bit. And that could pay dividends for them in the end. But I think being like Fort Valley State, Hicks is a player of the year of the conference for the SIAC. And so, like, I mean, those guys are going to come in and get after it. And, you know, it's one of those things with volleyball where if UCLA isn't on point taking care of things and they make a slip, all of a sudden you lose a game. So I think we're going to have some good volleyball, which is great. I don't think Larry and his crew are going to be scared. They're going to walk in, get after it a little bit, and we'll have some good volleyball. But I wonder if they have the 7 a.m. service. Do both of those teams have that? Ooh. I think that's when it starts that day. That'll be nice and early for those guys. And so I think when you have this bracket, it's kind of like Division II does a lot of regional play like that, where they got eight teams in one day, and those service eves start pretty early. So get some coffee in you.
Well, I think it's interesting because from Fort Valley State perspective, I feel like all through the year, we kept talking about Isaiah Fed. But then the player of the year ends up being Jackson Hicks. And, you know, I just pulled up his numbers. He's hitting 306, 2.71 kills per set. And that's along with Isaiah Fed, who's hitting 346 and also hitting with the same kill. So as a team, you're going to want to watch. You don't want to like take it too easy. Yeah, sure. UCLA is going to be deep. Nope. Let's just go to Zach Rama. Oh, I'll take that 6'10 outside hitter. Yeah. To step in for Grant Sloan, who's 6'9. Oh, so.
Oh, high end D1 problems.
Well, with that, are we ready to jump over to our 2-7 matchup? Long Beach State and Belmont Abbey. Long Beach State of the Big West, Belmont Abbey of Conference Carolinas. Let's start with you, Jay, on this one.
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say the exact same thing. I think Long Beach has an opportunity to rest a couple of their big guys. I think I agree with Dan. They'll start the horses, see how that goes. Belmont Abbey's not bad either. I mean, they're the number 7 seed, and you know, again, you know, are there other teams that are maybe better than them caliber wise that should be in the tournament? Yeah. But when we go to 16, we can do that. But Derek's going to have his team just like Larry's going to have his team. They're going to be ready to go. They're going to scout. They're going to do all the things they're supposed to do. And it comes down to execution. And if you execute on the night when somebody else might hiccup, or maybe there's a speed bump, or, you know, you get a couple of crazy points and all of a sudden you start to tighten up a little bit. But Long Beach is so well prepared. They got so much depth. I think they have 48 guys listed on the roster for the championships. They're just deep. So I think Long Beach is going to go through this one fairly handily, just like UCLA will. But that's my take.
Which, side note there, I happen to be jumping around Ariel Houlihan. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with who she is, and Matt Houlihan, or they have coaches talk. They did a full, they must have been on a few bottles of wine episode on the Long Beach State roster. And I don't judge either way, but I did laugh pretty hard. So if you want to find that on their feed, it's a good listen. but I diverge here. We'll go to Dan on that 2-7 matchup.
I'd be curious to see what is it, Matt Stang? Stank, he was the offensive player of the year for Belmont Abbey. So, he'll be a piece for them. That's key, I think. And
Saskunas, Matt Saskunas.
Saskunas, yeah, a Wisconsin kid, I think. So, but I think he'll do some nice things for them. He's a good player. He's got a good group. Derek's done a nice job, and I think they're going to be coming in and they're going to be competitive. 20-win season. There's another guy. The last two guys we talked about, I think Larry Rather could be coach of the year. And I think Derek could be coach of the year. You got two coaches who have taken programs, different pathways, but ultimately done some great things. I mean, 20-win season for these guys. One regular season, captured the bid to get in or the conference tournament. So, I think a great opportunity to see those guys battle with them. We've seen a Conference Carolina upset of Princeton a few years back. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think it should be a good match. So,
yeah. Go over to
Brad. I think for Belmont Abbey, it's a tough matchup for them. And like in terms of how both teams play, and I've seen one match of Belmont Abbey's, so not the most well-versed. But in terms of how they play, it seems like they're very similar styles in the sense they try to serve in, play more volleyball, rely on their volleyball and passing well over time and relying on those outsides and liberos to keep them in system so that they can run a relatively balanced offense. But I do think Matt Saskunas is going to be fun to watch. And I think, you know, with him being an ABCA All-American, honorable mention, and, having such a great season, I think getting to that stage is going to be really, really cool to get to see him go take on the right side blockers for Long Beach State. And then, but I think overall Long Beach is going to be a little too clean, a little too steady, and a little too comfortable playing in their home environment for us to be on too big of an upset watch.
Yeah. Jay.
I already said it. It's the exact same thing as you.
Oh, see that's right. Well, let me just throw in some of the offensive names you may want to look for in Belmont Abbey, but we brought his name up a few times. Matthew Saskunas, 297 kills in the season, hitting 286, and that was good for 3.23 kills per set. But another guy that you need to watch out for is Zach Puentes, 316 kills on the season, averaging 3.47 per set. And he had a great tail in the season and the conference tournament. So they're very pin reliant. So we'll see how they match up against the Long Beach State pins of Skylar Varga, Sotiris Chapanis, and Clark Godbold, or Nathan Harlan. We'll see.
or insert here, or insert there. Yeah.
Well, I think any team that's going to have to face Long Beach's middles is going to be very challenged because they've got Dearis McRaven, who basically has jets on his ankles, and a 6'10 Simon Torwey. And that's a lot to get around. And then you start adding in their offense. They're so tough to stop.
The first kid you mentioned for Long Beach,
which one? Skylar Varga?
No. The first middle, not Torrey.
Yes. Oh, McRaven.
Yeah, McRaven. McRaven's what, 6'5", yep, maybe? But he's got a cannon for an arm when he hits it. There's also been some times it's not been so, terminal in his favor. But, man, when he gets on it, he gets on it. And, I would suspect that Long Beach is, going to run through the middle quite often that match.
And they still have the option of going through Lazar Buchkov if they wanted to, because early on in the season, he had the starting nod. So,
what a problem to have.
All right, we're getting to the what could be, I mean, in my eyes, one of the most pair of entertaining matches that could be happening on quarterfinals day. Let's go to the 4-5 match. No, let's go the Ohio State Grand Canyon matchup, the 3-6. Let's start with Dan on this one.
Great match. I'd be curious if Pasteur just rested the entire time, so he's just super healthy as he walks into this. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, he was dealing with some knee stuff, but I mean, I thought he elevated his play. I thought Shane elevated their play. We know Grand Canyon's in a much better groove now, playing at a higher clip, but this will be a fun one. I don't think this is like, hey, Grand Canyon walks in and sweeps this. I think Ohio State's going to push them, and I think this could, you know, I think in the end it'll go Grand Canyon's way, but I think Ohio State's going to make it pretty hard and put themselves in a good spot. And I think Michael Wright was playing some of his best volleyball at the end, and Thomas Poole does a nice job for them, and so yep. It should be a good match.
All right, Jay.
I think both teams having experience from last year's championship gives them both a similar edge to be able to feel a little bit more comfortable. It's been a while since Ohio State was in it with that group. Obviously, Grand Canyon getting in there with their group for the first time. And I think Grand Canyon last year, we knew that when they were in system, they were ridiculously good. And they were not in system very often, which I think led to their downfall in that tournament last year. However, they've got some guys this year that, you know, can hit a little bit better out of system. So if it's not always perfect, I think it'll be okay. I think Nicholas Slights can, and Michael Wright, the two setters for both teams, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I agree with Dan. I think, you know, I think Grand Canyon pulls this out, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes 4-5. It's not going to be a 3-0 sweep. You know, you got Pasteur, you got Wetzel. Are they firing on both on all cylinders at the same time? When that happens, I know they've kind of ham and egged it a little bit over the course of the year, but when they're both firing at the same time, it's a pretty deadly group. But Grand Canyon's got a few of their own weapons. So, but I think Grand Canyon pulls this one out and moves on.
Ooh. Brad.
This is the best matchup from the first round of games in my eyes. I just think both teams match up really, really well. I think the middles will be really interesting. They're two very different set of middles where Grand Canyon, Rico Wardlow, Cameron Thorne, who Cameron Thorne was just a first team All-American. I think going into the year, I think if you had to guess which middle from Grand Canyon would be a first team All-American, most of would have guessed Rico Wardlow. So Cameron Thorne has had a great year at Grand Canyon. So seeing them kind of two more undersized, super offensive, super dynamic, and really well-rounded middles going up against Ohio State's Justin Howard and Cole Young, who are a little bit bigger, a little bit longer, a little bit slower. They're still super athletic and great middles, but just two different sets of skill sets in the middle is going to be really, really interesting. And then the other piece to watch is to me is the setters. You have Michael Wright and Nick Slight. Michael Wright at Ohio State, a little bit bigger, a little bit more athletic, a little bit more dynamic with his serve. And Nick Slight, I mean, I think, you know, arguably the best setter in the country and just got named to the VNL roster on the 30-man training team for USA men's volleyball. So I think obviously does a lot of things really, really well. And I think one little nuance to be watching is the pyramid where this will be played is notorious for being different for setters and the depth perception in terms of how the lights are and where they're set up in the pyramid. So seeing how those guys acclimate quickly. And I was trying to look and it didn't look like either team has played at the pyramid in the last 2 years. I could be off there. So I think that will be a piece that can be interesting to watch as the match unfolds, where we might not see the offenses humming like we're used to from both these teams, but especially from Grand Canyon early on. So if Ohio State can take advantage of that and score some points from the end line, I see this one going 5, and I see Grand Canyon getting out of it with their experience from last year, really just kind of when it seemed like a little bit too short for them. I see them pulling it out and dealing with some adversity to win in five.
So Birch can send hate mail to all you guys then, right? Is that the deal? Well, I'm going to add another perspective in there. Ohio State has proven to beat number one teams. UCLA suffered their early loss to a Jacob Pasture-loaded Ohio State offense. And what's amazing about the Ohio State offense is I think Shane Wetzel's really kicked up his game towards in the postseason because he started getting some really good numbers. And, of course, Jacob Pasture coming back in helps. But the physicality of Michael Wright as a setter, I saw him do some really awesome things as a setter. He has a physicality nature because he is bigger. He's more athletic. He Kong block on some pretty decent hitters early on in the season. And he has what Jay says is moxie. And I think that could be the X factor, getting that the toot out there on the court and the ability to go up against, you know, Grand Canyon, because they too have a certain level of moxie too. But if you shut that down, they kind of ride on that. So, and then in the, of course, the unsung hero, Thomas Poole is a solid libero. The mullet wearing, flying all over the place guy. He was so fun to watch at first point, but all through the season, he's been such a consistent defender and passer and serve receive. So, and I hate to skip out on the middles, but I only can remember Cole Young's name. I think it's Justin Howard, the other middle.
Justin Howard, yeah.
But they're big guys. That's a big physical presence. And that matchup between Wardlow and, Thorn, that's going to be a very, like, two different styles of middles. But does big win out or does fast and athletic win out in this one? So it could turn
Street into a fighter, baby. Street fighter, two totally different styles.
Well, I'm telling you, that could be the slugfest of slugfests because it depends on what guys show up on Tuesday. So
I think they're all going to show up. I think they'll all show up, and it's going to be a fun one for everyone to be watching. So personally, I'm glad that that's the late match and going to be the marquee matchup.
But that's the 7:30 or the 8 match, the
final match of the day. What it says.
Yeah, yep. If I had to pick an upset, though, just to give you one, this is the upset. So I'll give Birch some love. How about that? So if I was going to pick one.
Now, Worley's going to come back at you.
That's okay. So.
Well, that brings us to the 4-5, and that is UC Irvine versus Penn State. Let's go with Jay, since that's his home conference guys there.
Well, I think it's no surprise, Penn State's got probably arguably one of the best middles in the country and arguably one of the best opposites in the country. And those two guys get a lion's share of the balls being set. Irvine obviously has, a player of the year candidate in Heno. The question mark will be who else steps up around him. You've seen in recent weeks, Flexen playing on the right side. You've seen him playing on the left side. You've seen Tongatour coming in and settling things down a little bit. And he's effective as an outside hitter, but is he really a weapon, or is he just a steadying force? Does Darcy step up and become a 7-footer pain in the butt for the team across the net? Because we've seen him kind of go away a little bit. My thought process is this. Penn State plays really good defense as well as UC Irvine. If Heno gets a little help, it's going to be UC Irvine taking this match. I think as good as Schwob can be as a setter, he's a freshman. And Shuey's got a lot of experience. And the outside hitters for Penn State, for Penn State, they're not going to hit over Shuey. So Shuey's not a blocking liability. Whereas against some of the other teams, Shuey could be a little bit of a liability. But those two guys are just really good. Valenzi and Cole are just good. They're smart. They find holes. They tip balls. They do all those things. But I think, for me, if it becomes a one-man show, it's a toss-up. If Heno can get a little help, I think Irvine wins this one in 4 or 5. I don't think it'll be a walkthrough for either team.
All right, we're gonna go to Dan because I think he's got to jump off here, but I want to get his thoughts on that 4-5 matchup, UCI and Penn State.
Irvine's so battle tested. Like, and it's not to say Penn State's not, because they've played some great teams, but man, you think about everybody that Irvine's played this year, and they've had some great wins, and how he's moved the lineup and the pieces, and Sheward running the show. You know what I mean? And like Hinnow being one of the best in the country right now. And I think they're gonna probably, I'm with Jay, they're probably gonna win 4 or 5. I mean, Kerr's done a really nice job, and Valenzi steadies the passing out, and like these guys are gonna serve and pass at a pretty high rate. And that could be the thing on Irvine. If Irvine doesn't control that, it could get them into a little bit of trouble. Do you know what I mean? Because you know Penn State's gonna serve and pass pretty well. I think Irvine could win the net battle on some stuff. I don't know. So be this is the third match, right? Correct?
No, that's the second match of the day.
Second match.
Yeah.
Okay. Woo. Well, hopefully Pav got his guys out there a couple of days ago. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's like no, it should be a good one. And for all the volley talkers that have the question about Lewis getting their title back, I don't know if I could wave my wand, I would do it, but there's a whole lot more going on with that stuff than just us getting our title back like that. We're not exactly Reggie Bush in the USC land right there. Do you know what I mean in terms of that?
Well, I'm glad you addressed that, Dan. But before we let you go, who's your pick to move on and win the Natty?
To win the Natty. Well, let's stay with that upset on Ohio State. They're going to upset Grand Canyon. And then that's on the side with Long Beach. But I still think it's going to be Long Beach and UCLA in the final. Yeah, and I got to pick a winner.
Yeah, because I'm going to play this at the AVCA banquet. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no winner. Sorry, I can't do that.
All
You're like,
right, so you,
sorry.
we'll, the finalists will be UCLA, Long Beach State. We'll let you go then with that
Well,
then. All
let me
right,
go
Dan.
on that. So, all right, guys, good seeing you. So,
See you, bud.
see you,
Yeah.
Dan. Thanks for jumping on. All right, gentlemen, remaining panelists, you know the question. What's it going to be here? Irvine.
I
Actually,
wanted
let
to
us
touch on
finish the
the
Irvine Penn State. Yeah.
Irvine Penn State match real quick, and I think Irvine's in a good predicament in the sense where I think in this matchup specifically, their better lineup is having Akil Tengutar in for Flexen, because of that serve and pass battle, and because Akil Tengutar might be the best passer out of anyone in the national tournament, you know, and he is phenomenal in serve receive. And if they're able to pass at a consistent level, I think with the liabilities, both left sides are a little bit smaller for Penn State. And I think also with, you know, having Heno out there attacking as well, and he does such a great job of moving around and utilizing those block disadvantages, whether it's hitting some D balls or hitting some 40s or hitting his red in rotation one, to where I think that ends up being a huge factor. That stopping Irvine's offense is going to be something that is going to be tough for Penn State, you know, and they know that, and they're going to have a dialed in plan there. But I see Irvine taking this, but the problem with Irvine is probably to win it all, they need Flexen on the court, and you probably want him playing in this match, and you want him firing on all cylinders going into hopefully the next three matches you have. So I think they're in a kind of, if they start with flexing, it could get a little bit dicey in this matchup. But I think they ultimately will probably have to start with him, you know, because they're planning to win the next three matches.
I wonder if I'm Niff, if I'll play Niff for a second. I'm starting Darcy only because it's his usual position. If Darcy's not getting it done, then I'm putting Flexen on the right side and saying, hey, just give us a block and put down a few balls. But yeah, Heno can't be the only guy. They're not gonna win with one guy. You don't win with middles. But Tengator, he could be the difference maker, I think, for Irvine if he's having a good night.
He's been on the court for those the upsets of the number one. So, you know, not a bad option to have. That's for sure. But I feel like everyone overlooks Maximus Desmus Meridius, the gladiator in the middle for Irvine, Max Grigoriev. You know, he's second on the team in aces. He's hitting well over 350 plus. And they're in system. You know, they're going to go to him. And he's listed at 6'4", but he's one of those jumpers with a quick arm swing.
I told you about that kid a couple of weeks ago. And I don't mean like I told you like you never knew about him, because obviously, Rob, you know the kid. But I told you, he's an unsung hero on that team. He's good. And he's going to go, if he has Toby in front of him, he's going to have to make Toby make some decisions, because he's up quick. He's got a fast arm and he hits well. It could be a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah. Irvine's dealt with good middles. They've dealt with Voss and Nurster and Hawaii. They've dealt with Torwey and McRaven. Like, they're, and Connor Campbell, the other middle, he's a heck of a blocker, especially in the middle of the court.
The challenge for Penn State will be, and it's not a knock, but it's been the topic of conversation amongst some coaching staffs, is the connection between Schwob and Ezeonu has not always been 100%. And if Toby doesn't get where he can, you know, hit the ball with some authority at a high clip at a high altitude, he tends to throw that ball around a little bit. And then all bets are off, because Irvine, they can play defense around that. Shuey and Cole are going to pick some of those things up. But if he's connecting, not a lot of people in your gym that are hitting at that altitude. It's going to be tough to defend.
Well, let me ask you this, Jay, with Penn State being a familiar opponent in the EIVA, you know, Pav's been switching it up with Schwob and Snyder. Who's he go with?
Schneider is a blocking liability at this level. If you have Schneider on that right side blocking against Heno, it's game over. They're just going to – Irvine does not like to fool around. If they know that matchup's going to be there in front of them all the time, they will throw that ball 20 times in a row over to Heno and just keep scoring points. Snyder's a good setter. I'm not saying he's not, but he's a blocking liability compared to Schwob. Schwob's, 6'5", 6'6", touches a little bit higher clip. And then if you have middles that can run gaps efficiently, which Irvine does, and you put a little bit more pressure on that right side blocker to have to make a decision – it's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah. Well, let me pose a question to you guys. We let Dan get out on an easy way. We didn't have him pick a winner. We had him pick the finalists. So, Brad, who are your finalists going to be in the 2024 NCAA Men's Division I-II Championship?
Yeah, I think in one semifinal, you got UCLA, and I think Irvine gets through that matchup with Penn State, which, you know, I think that's a matchup where UCLA, like you're not too stoked on seeing Irvine. I mean, every team is going to be pretty darn good. But especially Irvine, that's going to be a really scary one for Sparrow and the coaching staff to prepare for. But I think ultimately UCLA's firepower and their ability to plug guys in and, you know, and like, yeah, it's tough on Sparrow and the coaching staff, but it's even tougher on the players. But they've been so good, whether it's Grant Sloan or Ido David or Rama or Robinson or Champlin or Knight, like they've just kept stepping up and answering to those opportunities to get subbed in and change the game. So I think that continues, and I'd have UCLA over Irvine there, as much as I'd love to throw Irvine and get another Big West team into the final. And then I have Grand Canyon, Long Beach State in the other semifinal. And I think this is going to be, that match might be the best match of the tournament between Long Beach and Grand Canyon in my eyes. And I can, that might be one that goes 23-21 in the fifth set. And everyone's on the edge of their seat for 45 minutes watching it. But I think ultimately Long Beach State playing in the pyramid, playing at home, is going to be that slight edge there over Grand Canyon. And then it'd be Long Beach, UCLA. And are we doing finals predictions or are we?
Well, we let Dan get off the hook because he didn't want to pick a team. So that's up to you. I'll leave it to you.
I would let my my Big West bias trickle in there and give Long Beach the nod over UCLA.
Woo, look at that. Not two Big West teams in the semi with Long Beach winning or Irvine winning. That's a true Big West bias.
Yeah, no, I had to hide it a little bit, you know.
How about you, Jay?
Well, I think Sparrow curses the day that he brought a French outside hitter over to UC Irvine years ago with the name of Kevin Tilly. And now he's seeing 2.0 Tilly Heno across the net. That's not a walkover match for UCLA by any standard. Heno seems to pick up his match play at the most critical moments, and You know, UCLA maybe across the board has better players, but if you're watching Heno, he could do it all by himself. He just needs somebody else to touch the ball in between his contacts. So I don't know. I think UCLA wins that, but it's I agree with Brad. I'm not looking at that matchup with any kind of hopes of being easy. It's not going to be.
Well, let me throw the wild card out there, though, first, just for you guys to ponder. And I hear it all over sports. I've heard it all through the conference tournaments this year. Hard to beat a team three times.
I don't buy into that. That's
as someone who went through that, I buy into it. It is hard.
You know who created that statement? The team that lost to another team twice and has to play them a third time just to put a thought in somebody else's head.
I got to put it out there for discussion.
Doesn't mean a damn thing. It's the playoffs. None of that matters. Here's where things for me get dicey. Grand Canyon, Long Beach. I something's telling me that Grand Canyon's going to pull that out. Something's telling me that Grand Canyon is going to be, it's not going to be a 3-0 sweep, but I for some reason think it's going to be Grand Canyon pulling that out at home against Long Beach at home. Only because why not? I have no ability to think that anything any different can happen other than just two good teams are going to battle it out. And why not? I mean, at this point, why not? Right. Yeah. I mean, you're going into the match. Nobody in that gym that's just a fan of Long Beach State, you know, is going to be rooting for you. And it's probably going to be 95% Long Beach State fans. So you're playing in really hostile environment. But you know what? Grand Canyon's kind of used to that. They don't care so much about playing in those kind of environments. I think it's going to be Grand Canyon UCLA in the final.
An all MPSF final. Talk about MPSF bias now, huh?
Oh, I just don't know. Because, man, Grand Canyon won that one. And when it mattered for MPSF tournament title,
Well, there is an
UCLA wins it all.
Wow. Well, this is the X factor for Grand Canyon. And that they had a change, basically an evolution of their lineup, so to speak. Due to an injury to the Rogers, they had Anderson now playing right side or Oppo, who has got a whippy left arm. I mean, that guy's, he's going to be hard to stop. And they moved Gianni over to the left side, which is the original position at Grand Canyon. So, I mean, they're going to be different and stronger right now. In my
opinion. Hits one of the best picks in the game. It's so fast and so hard. It's unreal how good that kid is. So, yeah, I that's an upset. I know Long Beach State fans are going to hate me. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean I'm determining the outcome, but I'm just throwing something out there. Let's just see what happens, you know? So.
Yeah. Those, that 3-6-4-5, man, that could be some long nights, I think.
Yep.
Or long matches bumping the schedule later. So
I will be glued to my TV all day Tuesday and for half the day on Thursday and for sure on Saturday evening. It'll be fun.
Yep. Hey, we are going to leave with that because we are an hour in and we've only done the NCAA stuff. So we definitely have a ton of questions for all you loyal listeners. We will get them. There's some great, great questions been asked.
We'll get to it next week. We promise.
But that was interesting. Dan brought that one up because I felt like that was the most pressing with Reggie Bush getting his Heisman back. And everyone's asking, well, does Hawaii and Lewis get their titles back? And they're different situations. And ironically, Hostas Theohoridis, who was on that Hawaii team that had that national championship nullified or taken away. I forgot the exact terminology, but he actually has a book out now. It was sent to me by ESPN Honolulu's Tiff Wells. And I want to take a peek at what he says in the book, just for curiosity's sake. But again, all the quarterfinals live on NCAA.com. The analyst will be Rob St. Clair. You see him through some of the VNL stuff as well as some of the international stuff that's being played across around the world, along with Daniel Gilman, does Pro Volleyball Federation and NCAA Women's, I believe, for Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and the Mustangs. So that's NCAA.com. They'll be on it through the semis, and an old host will be back on the finals. Kevin Barnett, originally of the Net Live. We'll claim that fame. We are on the show since 2006. So I'm imagining it's Paul Sunderland that's with him, but I don't have that confirmed yet.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Please go and watch, support the game, go on social, follow these teams, comment, let the NCAA know that we are out there. Greatest sport on Terraflex, if you have it, or Sport Court, whatever you want to do. Want to say thanks to Dan Friend, who already dropped off, of a Lewis, Brad Rothschild of UC San Diego, Jay Hossick of George Mason, and Theo Edwards, who's fighting administration and our ops and facilities crew to try and get practice times remedied over at CSUN. So, gentlemen, next week we'll meet again for what would be our final episode of the season.
Thanks for listening to College Volleyball Weekly. Be sure to follow Rob Aspero at The Rob on the Mic on Instagram and at Rob on the Mic on Twitter.